Welcome to Inspired Artists Podcast with me, Sirgun Kaur. In today's episode, I'm talking with Tigran Arakelian. He is a conductor who used to play flute with me when I was performing in Los Angeles before I changed my name and found yoga. And he is currently living in the Seattle area, just like me. So, cute little coincidence there. He's the assistant conductor for the California Philharmonic. He's the music director and conductor for the Northwest Mahler Festival, Federal Way Youth Symphony, Bainbridge Youth Orchestras. The stuff he has to say about what it means for kids to be in orchestras and what they learn is just so sweet. And I know you're really going to enjoy this conversation. So here we go.
Can you see me now?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Hey, how's it going?
Great. So where do you live specifically? Do you live like actually in Seattle?
I live in Lynnwood, which is...
Yeah. No, I live in Redmond.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were just visiting.
No. I live here. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. Because yeah. When you said that on Instagram, I thought you were just visiting, just to visit.
No. I'm dating someone who works for Intel.
And oh, wow.
Yeah, so I moved to Redmond.
And this is the place. Redmond is the place, and Seattle in general for that kind of work.
Totally. Well, yeah, so I mean, a lot had happened before that, but okay, cool. So this is really funny. So how did you end up in this area?
Well, it's been a couple of things. It's been a few different, time periods. One was 2005. I came here to do some work at Cornish College of the Arts. And then I decided that it's not the place for me. So I left and then came back again in 2009. I was like, I really want to finish the degree. And so I went back. And then I was in LA for a couple of years. I think that's when I met you. I met you in like 2007 maybe or something.
Yeah, around
then. That's when I was at Long Beach State. And then I went to do my master's in conducting at Cal State Northridge. And then got a call from Ludovic Merlot, who was the conductor of Seattle Symphony at the time. And he said, hey, I heard great things about you. I heard you want to do a doctorate in music. Do you want to come? We'll give you a full ride. Do you want to come study at the University of Washington? So in 2013, I moved to Seattle to study at the University of Washington for my doctorate. So it's been a journey. Yeah. Seattle has been like three different times. Third time I've been here since 2013.
Okay. Wow. That's really interesting. Yeah. So in, just after, we stopped playing music together, I actually moved to Arizona. So I've been living in Arizona and then I just moved in December.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Journey.
I don't think I realized that you were studying conducting.
Well, conducting started in like 2009 for me. So, that's like maybe soon after, you know, I left LA for a bit. Around then.
Okay. So are you still working with the symphony?
No, I work with various different groups. I work with Northwest Mahler Festival, which is, it's for Mahler and his symphonies, and that's a summer thing. It's about 3 or 4 weeks during the summer. And then I work with Port Townsend Symphony, which is, I don't know if you've been to Port Townsend, but it's on the peninsula up north. It's pretty far. And then Bainbridge Youth Orchestra, which is, I actually have a rehearsal tonight. And then Federal Way Youth Orchestra. So, and then California, I'm there in the summers and working with a couple of orchestras. One of them is California Philharmonic. So I'm in California in the summers. Sometimes, I mean, it depends. It's on and off because now that we have a baby, it's like I try to make sure I have enough time to spend with him. It's really kind of put my life in like a completely different perspective. I never thought of it that way till he was born because my parents would always say, "Hey, you know, when you'll understand what it means to be a parent when you have your own kids, if you have your own kids." And I always thought, well, I understand, I appreciate them, I respect them, and I love them for everything they've done for me. They've done so much for me. But having an actual someone who depends on me and is you know, actually my child, it's been like a crazy experience. I'm like, yeah, it's like way more than I ever thought it would mean for me. So I'm like, I finally understand my parents.
I think a lot of forgiveness happens when you.
Yeah, for sure. Even though, you know, yeah, it's been some crazy moments with my parents, ups and downs, as with everyone, I think. But I feel like I always really appreciated everything they've done for me, especially since, you know, as a child, I had a really serious, at the time in Soviet Armenia, they called it like a chronic bronchitis or something. But my parents took me to Ukraine for various treatments. They took me all over Armenia for various treatments, and nothing was really helping. But they just kept trying and finding ways. I would spend months in children's hospitals because it was such a serious thing that I needed support in case I really can't breathe on my own. And then the flute story is that, you know, I actually with the flute specifically, I went and my parents took me to this Armenian doctor who was doing some homeopathic medicine or something. And they were like, well, he was like, well, I'm going to do this stuff. And he would put like weird leaves with honey and all kinds of weird stuff on it. And he was like, well, I'm doing all this stuff, but he should really play a wind instrument. It'll help him out. So my parents were like, well, what should we do? What with a wind instrument? My dad played cello and my mom played kanon, which is string. It's a string instrument. It's almost like if you put the harp on its side and you play it with your fingers, it's used a lot in the Middle East. Anyway, so my parents were like, well, what wind instrument? So they finally, they're like, okay, you know what? We're going to take him to flute. They like the flute. They took me to a flute lesson. So
what a great movie. But was that sort of your introduction to music? That's how you got into music?
Well, my grandmother, who is actually here in Seattle visiting us, my grandmother is was a piano teacher for many, many decades, and music theory and history teacher. She would teach at this like conservatory prep program, and she sort of got me started. I remember vaguely a few lessons on the piano, but I don't think that went too well when I was 8. And then 9 is when I started the flute. So.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
I will take intermittent notes. So if it looks like I'm doing something.
Oh, is this, are you recording now? Or?
Oh, yeah, this is live.
Oh, cool. Okay, great. Live. All right. Sounds good.
We're not live, sorry, but we're
well, yeah, it's recording.
I like cool. to keep okay. it really natural, so it's good you didn't realize.
Oh, nice. You're awesome. I sometimes, you know, I have my own podcast and sometimes I'm just like, okay, and now I've been recording, but we'll get started now. And I think you are, I'm going to steal this idea. I like it. I like it. This is great.
What's your podcast called?
Well, Off the Podium. It's a music podcast. I have about 70 plus episodes. You should be on it. We should do one together. And I started that because I felt like there were a lot of things in the classical music world specifically, since I'm more part of that world, that were frustrating to me, that I didn't enjoy and didn't like. So I thought I should make something where I, you know, talk about some of the things that really bother me about the classical music world and how I think it could change. So I started that, and it sort of has that feel still, but at the same time, it's more of just talking to some people that I really appreciate, respect, and like what they do, and just have a conversation with them. And I've been fortunate to talk to some very good friends, and also just people who are actually very well known in the field and get their ideas on it. So I had African American Pulitzer Prize winning composer George Walker. I did one of the last interviews before he died. He was on my podcast. Actually, he doesn't like to be called African American, so I'll say Black. Because on my podcast, I was like, well, you're the first African American to do this. He's like, Tigran, you could call me Black American, but not African American. He was a great interview. I had a really nice time talking to him. And then I had, I don't know if you know, the Kronos Quartet, a very famous string quartet. I had their founder on the podcast. I also had a Grammy Award winning jazz bass player, Christian McBride, who's played with Sting and all these pop artists, but he's also recorded a lot of jazz albums. So. And then just a variety of other people who've been fantastic and so nice. And it's great because the thing that I realized in doing all these podcasts is that it's you know, you get some people who are well known in the industry and also some people who might not be well known, but they're, you know, they're starting their careers. But I've learned something from every single person, and it's been such a great experience. I almost feel selfish, but it's it's like a little university lesson for me every time I learn something from each one of those people. So it's been great. It's been such a great time.
Oh, I love that. That's so wonderful. I'm so happy to hear that you're like doing so much in the realm. Don't you find, I mean, like when you're passionate about something, I feel like you want to do so much, so many more things.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Spread it so far. So it was funny to me that I ended up doing a podcast. I never thought I would do a podcast, but.
Well, yours are, I really like yours because you edit and you spend so much time in putting this thing together. For me, I'm a little bit lazy, I think.
You think I spend time putting it together? That's awesome.
Well, it seems, you know, you have your introduction at the beginning and, you know, it's well put together. I really like your podcast, but mine, I just kind of press record and I really don't do much editing or anything. I don't even cut anything. So
yeah, it all works. I mean, I actually feel like I'm pretty lazy about putting it together. So awesome. Thanks. I can show you how to put together an intro if you want.
I would love to, you know, learn about that. I'm terrible at this stuff. It's at the very minimal for me in putting this thing together.
I mean, but that could also just be your style, you know, like.
That's true. That's true.
You know.
Yeah.
Some people are very edited, and like, I don't edit the content mm-hmm. unless there's some, you know, big technical glitch or something.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay.
I won't like remove ums or, you know, something like that.
Oh, I see. Okay. So I should say less ums. Okay.
Is that a bad word in Armenian? I remember somebody saying that was like not a good word to say.
No.
Maybe
it was Greek. Yeah. Yeah.
So do you want to tell us about your background? Because you sort of referenced coming from, you know, Armenia and.
Well, I was born in the last couple of years of Soviet Armenia. Soviet Union, Armenia officially got out in 1991. I was born some years before that. So it was kind of a rough time at the time when I was born in Armenia because late 80s, a major earthquake happened in Armenia. Thousands of people died, and it's already a small country, so it was absolutely devastating. And at the same time, Armenia went to war with neighboring Azerbaijan over disputed territory. So that was, you know, that was another added terrible thing. And on top of all of that, being a small country and relying so much on the power, which was Russia, and all these states that were dependent on Russia because that was the biggest country. And everyone was sharing various resources. So it was a tough time because to have lost all of that, you know, I remember, spending time with my family and, you know, going to school and then coming back and doing my homework under candlelight because, you know, Armenia didn't have electricity. And for the water, for example, we lived on the fifth floor. And I remember my brother and I would go downstairs all the way to the first floor, take water and take it up to the fifth floor of this apartment building. So it was kind of a rough time, but my parents really wanted something better. So my dad started working with various friends, and they decided to go to Belarus, which is another former Soviet republic state. And my family ended up, when I was 4 or 5, we moved to Belarus for a couple of years, and then things were still bad there. So my dad's like, if it's going to be bad, might as well live in our own state and our own country. So we went back to Armenia. So it's been back and forth. So 4 years in Armenia when I was born, 4 years in Belarus, and then 3 or 4 years in Belarus, and then back to about 4 years in Armenia till I was 11 or 12. And then we moved to the state. So it's been a constant back and forth. And both my parents are in a rough time trying to figure out what they want to do with life and make it better for us. And also just a rough time for all of those countries. And for those who don't know, Belarus actually still has the same president, I think, since 1994. They've had the same guy who's Lukashenko. He's been the president of Belarus since 1994. And I think he's still going to stay for another 20 years or something.
Is he being elected?
Yes, elected.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't, I mean, I guess I don't, I mean... those elections, I don't know how real they are or how.
Right.
I don't know. I don't think people would have picked him, but I guess he's been elected because they have elections. So.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Interesting. So yeah. Where did you move in the United States when you first came?
The second most populated Armenian city outside of Armenia. So the first one, I think most people think that it's Moscow because, you know, Armenia was part of the Soviet Union. And Moscow was the main capital. So a lot of Armenians went to Moscow and there's still millions of Armenians that live in Russia. But the second most populated city now outside of Armenia is Glendale, California. Or LA area. So there are a lot of Armenians in LA area. So I grew up in Glendale, California, with going to school with maybe 60 or 70% Armenian kids. So yeah, it's been.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah. So I grew up in Glendale, California, got there when I was in sixth grade and went to a band practice, and you know, I played flute. I started flute in Armenia, so I went to this band room with a bunch of, you know, band kids playing various instruments, and I look at the flute section and I see there's like 7 or 8 girls sitting there. I was like, oh wow, interesting, because in Armenia I went to this music conservatory academy thing for the youth, and that class had about 19 or 20 flute players. It was a big music school, had about 19, 20 flute players, and guess what, maybe one girl. I think it was just one girl. So going to that band room in the U.S. in Glendale, California, I was like, wow, this is crazy. It's like the opposite of what I'm used to. So yeah, it was interesting.
I'm echoing that. That is interesting because in the United States, or I've always felt like there are more women who play flute.
Yeah. And that's true. That's true. And, you know, it's, I think in Europe, maybe it's a little bit different. And that's another thing, you know, in classical music, all these, and maybe it's not just classical music, but, you know, gender and instruments and all this stuff, it's really an interesting thing. And, you know, tuba players, you know, if you think of brass players, they're usually men or big men. And I remember, I can't remember her name, but I remember years ago there was a woman who won the Detroit Symphony. I think it was the Detroit Symphony audition for the tuba, and it was behind the screen, so you can't tell who the person is. So when they actually opened to announce the winner, it was just a number, you know. So they opened to announce the winner. They said it's like this woman who's like, I think she was also short too. So she won the audition. Everyone was shocked. They're like, we were expecting like this big sound to be some big guy that's 6'6" and, you know, 250 pounds or something, but here comes this person. So, you know, sometimes we think of the, you know, instruments and genders, and we have ideas about what they are, but then there are always people who surprise us with, and I think it'll happen more and more as we continue in this world, because, you know, it's great to see a lot of different people trying different things and not being afraid to try different things because the society wants them to be, you know, a certain way, you know, so and that's changing, and it's great to see that it's changing. And that there's more, I conduct, so there are more women conductors now, and it's great because everyone that comes into the field brings something unique from different part of the world, from different experiences, and it's just a beautiful thing. I think it'll keep getting more beautiful.
Yeah, that's such a great thing to realize, I think. Especially when you're first starting off in music, is just how important everyone is. It's like, oh, there's already 10 million flute players. No, yeah. You play flute different than anyone because you're you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because you're you. Yeah.
And it's consistency. It's not losing track and perspective on being consistent. That's what I had a youth orchestra kid this year who came in, and she was like, you know, I'm frustrated. I didn't get the seat I wanted. I really wanted to be the concertmaster, and she didn't get it. And she was like, you know, I think I'm gonna quit. And it was her final year. She was a senior in high school, and youth orchestra, it's outside of school. It's just a separate nonprofit organization. She's like, I really don't want to be part of the orchestra. I don't want to play. And I talked to her. I said, you know, you've been consistent, and we've had this great relationship over the past couple of years. you know, youth orchestra, it's not just about using a music. It's not just about the competition. It's all the things that you learn in music that you're going to apply to your relationships and your life, whatever you do. So, you know, being consistent, being a team player. And I never pick on individuals in orchestra because orchestra is a team. So, you know, you could pick on, you know, maybe the first violins as a group, you know, about 10 first violins, but never specific person, because you have to learn. You can do that in your lesson. You have to learn how to be a team. And okay, if you didn't mess up that one time, that's fine, because you're someone in your team did. So it's going to be about the team. And you know, all these things that you learn in youth orchestra: consistency, being on time, being respectful to your colleagues and friends, and being able to listen. It's not just about you and orchestra. It's about being able to listen to the different sections. And sometimes I'll stop and say, you know, violas, who had the most important line here? Did you hear the solo? And it's just learning all these things that you're going to be able to apply to your life, and not even realize that some of these things that you learned were from youth orchestra. But you've had those experiences of listening and being consistent, being on time, being respectful, all these things that you're going to apply to your life, and it's going to just make it much more fulfilling, I think. Because that's what music and youth orchestra has done for me, so I want to be that person who kind of helps kids realize and understand these things, and you know, just be more positive in their, you know, life and towards other people. Because we've, you know, in classical music world and conductors, if you've seen it in the past, it's just been much more about fear, I think. And I don't think fear, from my experiences with leaders and conductors, I don't think fear is the way to get people excited and motivated to do stuff. I think if you're respectful and demanding a little bit, but if you're respectful and you show them that you really care for them and you show them that you're so passionate about the things that you do, they're going to get excited about it and naturally do it, because you don't want to get them to fear you and then do something for you. You want them to be excited and inspired and passionate, and you get them to do something, because they're going to leave that experience and be full of love and care for other people around them and inspire them as well. And so I try to do that. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I think usually it does, and hopefully it does. They'll realize it in the future as well.
Yeah, I like that, and it's also kind of the way I approach parenting. You know, like, I don't want my kids to fear me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my boy is still young. He's 5 months, so it's a journey. That's what I realized.
How old is your son?
5 months.
Oh yeah, yeah, very new.
Yeah.
Mine are 3 and 6.
Oh wow. Man, it's really been a long time since we've talked about what you're doing, and I love what you do, and I love the music that you make, and so it's great to see that we're able to reconnect again.
I know.
And that's the great thing about social media.
Yeah, it's really funny. And I was just thinking, like, the day that you contacted me, I think because you said, oh, I love, this was a great podcast or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Or you like
thumbs up
something that I did. And so it came up on my Instagram.
Yeah.
And it was that day I had actually been thinking about the album that I made prior to being Sirgan when I was Porter. And, it was so funny. I was like, oh, that's so weird that I was just thinking about that. And then you popped up, and then part of the feed was this conversation that we never finished about you being on the podcast.
Uh-huh.
And so then I asked you again. So yeah.
No, it's great.
And then you're in Seattle area. So funny.
Yeah, I can't believe you stop by sometime with your
fun. Yeah, it'd be great. Kids. I'd love to check out your orchestra too. That would be
really
our youth orchestra. Yeah. Yeah, we were just up in that area a couple weeks ago, I think, because my boyfriend's son was doing an archery tournament, and so we had to drop him off up there. So we just sort of hung out while he was doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what else? What else have you been up to?
Oh, what else? I went with my youth orchestra. One of my youth orchestras went to Korea a couple of times, 2014, 17, and 19, and we did tours and played with other youth orchestras in Korea, and it was a great experience, and the kids loved it. And for a couple of them, they actually were so young in 2014 when we went on our first tour that they ended up going on the tour in 17 and 19. So it was a great experience. They loved it, and it's just great to do these tours and experiences because kids learn so much from just not only being in a different country and realizing that you're in a different place, like being in someone else's home. So even though you're used to doing things a certain way, you have to understand that you have to be respectful of people doing things their own way.
Yeah.
So, these are great lessons as well for young people to learn and experience because, again, these are things that are going to help you in life, in relationships and life. And that's, again, I come back to each time with these lessons that it's going to help you in everything that you do in life. It's not just about music, orchestra. It's not just about music. So it was a great experience. And the great part was also working with other youth orchestras and realizing each time that when you play this music, it's, you know, they speak Korean. Most of the kids speak English, some of them speak Korean, but it's you try to come together and realize what you want to accomplish musically beyond the language barrier, you know. So it was a great experience.
Are you going and like actually collaborating with the other orchestra or just playing, kind of taking
turns playing it? Yeah, so there are two things that we do on each tour. One is that we go and we play our own concerts, but each time we've collaborated with another youth orchestra that's from Korea. And so we would play a couple of pieces, they would play a couple of pieces, and then we come together to play some pieces together as a group. So we also get to work on those pieces together while we're there. So it's been a really great experience. So hopefully we'll keep doing those. And there's a parent on the board of one of the youth orchestras, and she really wants us to go to China, even though now, you know, with this everything happening in China now, hopefully it'll end soon and everything will go back to normal. But at some point in the future, they're thinking of taking us to China and doing a tour there. And that would be another great experience.
That's really cool. So why Korea?
Well, Korea, because the three times that we went there, the first time we went there because the manager of the youth orchestra is Korean. So he already has connections there that make it easy for us to go there and you know, have a place to stay and have the connections to different venues that we're going to perform in. That's one. But the first time we went, it was such a successful thing. We made some connections. And so the second time we went, it was already much easier. Mm-hmm. And the third time we went, it was the absolutely easy because we had already made so many connections in the first two visits. Plus, having someone who's Korean and has the connection made it easy and very, very successful. So it was a great tour, this last one in 2019. So yeah, it was great. Even though my summer was really absolutely crazy because I was assistant conductor with California Philharmonic. So I would be in California most of the time. My wife was pregnant and I had a Mahler festival happening in Seattle at the same time. I had this other concert outside of California Philharmonic happening in California, and I had the tour. So I was all over the place. It was the busiest summer of my life. And what made it even worse for me to know that my wife is pregnant, she's in Seattle, and I'm just constantly away, most of the time away. So it was terrible. And she's a rock star for dealing with that. But it was a crazy summer. And I couldn't say no to any of these opportunities because you just never know if they'll, you know, happen again, if it would come back. And you have to, in music, you have to just say yes to a lot of things because next year you might not have the same opportunities, or if you say no, you might not be invited back to have that opportunity. So it's a brutal place, and but at the same time, it's very fulfilling, but it's tough.
Did you make it back for the birth or?
I made it back. And he was actually a week late than expected. So I made it back they said the due date would be August 20. I came back on August 19 and he was born on August 27. Mm, okay. So I was here. It was great. And I was there for the whole thing. And it was one of the greatest experiences of my life. So it was fun. It was great.
Those dates are baloney. So. Yeah. So that's so cool. I'm so excited for you that you, you've had the experience of being a father now. Do you think you guys will have more?
That's my hope. I kind of want to form a chamber orchestra. You know, that's my plan. I'm kidding. She would kill me if she hears this, but more. Yeah. At least a couple of more.
How many is a chamber orchestra?
Well, I mean, it's tough to say. You could say, 14 is a chamber orchestra or something.
So maybe some cousins.
Some cousins, yeah. Yeah.
We were just watching this show, 90 Day Fiancé. Uh-huh. Like, I never watch TV, but we were staying at, I haven't even had TV, but he happens to, Juan, my boyfriend, happens to have cable here, which I haven't had for, like, high school. I'm like, my parents got cable. I don't have cable. But anyway, he's like, let's watch this, because we had nothing to do. My kids were away. We were staying at a B&B, basically. And we start watching this. But anyway, there's this couple, they're Mormon, and the father or the husband's like, I want at least 8 kids. And the woman was like, with whom?
That's awesome.
Who's gonna be the mom of me?
I think if I said that, I would get the same response.
Yeah, I always wanted a lot of kids until I had one, and then I realized that it was a lot of work. But I think everyone's experience of that is different. It seems like you're not too scared from your experience so far.
No. But my wife thinks I'm scared of stuff in general, so I have to hold him properly and all this stuff. So I could be very particular in some ways. For example, my family, my parents. So I take him to swimming lessons. My parents thought I would be terrified to go into the water with him, even though I did swim and water polo, and I don't mind getting into the water myself. But my parents thought I would be terrified to get into the water with my son. And to their surprise, I got in and had a good time with him. So he loves, I guess most kids do, like swimming and water maybe, but my son, Arshak, he loves swimming and getting in the water and taking baths, and he likes it. He likes it a lot.
What's his name?
Arshak.
Arshak.
Arshak. Arshak.
Arshak. Does that have a meaning?
No meaning, but Armenia had a couple of kings named Arshak. It's a popular name, and that's the only name we came to agree on with my wife. So we both kind of made lists of names, and the one thing that we agreed on, we really wanted him to have an Armenian name. Okay. So that was the easy part, sort of. And then we realized it's not really the easy part, because she made a list and none of the names matched. And then we're like, okay, we're going to think about this again and make another list with different names. So we made another list with different names, and Arshak matched. That's the only one that matched. So there have been a couple of kings named Arshak there. There's an opera named after one of the kings, and actually crazy, because the name of the composer is Tigran Chukagian, and he wrote an opera called Arshak. That matched, and one of the kings, his name was Tigran, and he had a son named Arshak. So that was another thing there. And the founder of the Armenian Philharmonic Orchestra in 1924, I think, it was Arshak Adamyan. So that's another Arshak. So we came home to my parents' place in LA, and we told them we're having a baby boy, and we already came up with the name. And we told them the name, and my dad was shocked. He was like, Arshak, really? And because apparently, and I didn't know this, I only knew about one of my great-grandfathers. Apparently, my other great-grandfather, his name was Arshak.
Oh, neat.
So there it is. And my other great-grandfather, his name was Tigran. So anyway, so that last part we didn't know about. I knew about my great-grandfather being named Tigran, but I didn't know about the other one being named Arshak. So just all these connections, and so it worked out.
Yeah. Oh, that's so sweet. I love your name stories. My birth name, Porter, mm-hmm. my parents both had the same dream about a baby girl named Porter, and they didn't know they were having a girl. And so they each drew like a picture of the baby, because they're both kind of visual artists, and I looked the same, you know, they've had like this same dream. So they decided to name me Porter.
Yeah. And you're from Rhode Island, right? Or did you go to school in Rhode Island?
I went to school in Rhode Island. No, I grew up in Los Angeles and in France. So we went back and forth.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So you speak French?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's something I didn't know. I do remember, I think, Brown University or something. Yeah. I remember that we had that talk years ago. And there's some weird things I remember I've realized over the past couple of years. It's my meetings with people that I, you know, met 10 years ago or 12 years ago. And then I'll remember a really random thing. And sometimes I'm like, maybe I shouldn't say that I remember that random thing. They'll think I'm like stalking them or something.
No. I remember stuff like that. So.
Yeah.
I'll remember like where I was when somebody told me something, mm-hmm. like what it looked, you know, what I looked like if we were in a car or if we were at a restaurant, or, you know, I'll remember like the whole scene of when that information was. Mm. It's interesting.
And I remember our little performance at one of the clubs in, on Santa Monica, no, on Sunset or something. I remember.
Did you play with me when I played at that like famous club?
Yeah. I did play with you, and I can't remember what the name
like
was.
With like the fog machine.
Yes. I don't remember what that.
That was so weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember what that was called either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Playing in LA was interesting.
But you're enjoying Seattle and Redmond. This is a completely different place now. Than LA.
Yeah, I don't have a band yet. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I was in Phoenix, I had an awesome guitar player who was also a singer. So we would kind of split the bill most of the time, and mm-hmm. so we'd sing and play guitar. And we had like some great percussionists and an amazing violist and mm-hmm. And a bass player sometimes. But so now I'm kind of starting from scratch. So we'll see.
Yeah. It'll be great. I would love to see you. Yeah. I would love to see you. And you said something about jam. You know, I don't play much anymore, but
yeah,
maybe we'll do something. I don't know.
So you just conduct, you don't play flute anymore?
Yeah, not much. Unless I have to, you know, there was this, there's this Armenian singer, rock musician. He came to town, and we've known each other, and I got him some connections to come to town and play for the Armenian community, and he asked me to play with him, so I played a couple of songs with him, but otherwise not. Yeah, I just don't play much anymore.
I'm sorry I keep yawning. It's not you. I just started. Like, yesterday was the first day I ever took my kids to school ever. Like, they just started school because they'd been homeschooling.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so we'd been waking up at like 10, 11, you know.
And that's something that I would want to hear about. How's the homeschool style? I mean, that's something I have to think about in a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to think that one of you would have to do that as your job.
Yeah.
And I had been, you know, I don't know, for some reason it became part of who I thought I was. You know, I'm like, I'm this homeschooling mom. And
yeah.
But I wasn't really passionate about
it. Okay.
I loved the idea of it. It's just, so I was telling someone about this yesterday. It's like, we all sort of ended up doing our own thing all day. Mm-hmm. And you know, and I would take them places. That's when we would spend time together, is if we were at the house, we were kind of pretty much doing our own things. But, you know, then I'd like take them to a children's museum or to the zoo or, you know, out to the park or whatever. And then we'd end up spending time together. But I just didn't feel like I was, I don't know, I was providing them with what I envisaged I would mm-hmm. be providing them with as a home, you know, a homeschooling mom. Mm-hmm. So And then when also my kids always had built-in community because we lived in this yoga Sikh community in Phoenix, and they never had to make friends. They just had kids there. And now that we live here, it's like, how do we make friends?
Yeah. Yeah. And Seattle is not the easiest place to make friends. You know, I've been realizing the Seattle freeze. I thought it was just something people in Seattle say, but I've come to realize over the past couple of years, and it took me longer than most people, but I was just like, okay, this is an actual thing. It's the Seattle freeze, you know? So
I've never even heard that. What does that mean?
Well, Seattle freeze, just, I guess it's because of the weather, and it's mainly weather related that people are just colder and they don't want to interact as much. And
right.
Stuff. So yeah, I don't know.
Oh, actually, that's funny because I wondered about this. So my friend who lives in Rhode Island, actually, no connection to Brown, but she happens to live in Rhode Island. She wanted to introduce me to her friend who lives out here. She lives in like Everett, I think.
Okay.
And she has a son who's my son's age. And so she connected us on Facebook and she wrote like, you know, Sirgan lives, here and you live here and you guys are both awesome and you should connect. And she was like, yeah, let's get together when it's warmer. Like, I'll see you in the day. And I'm like, okay.
So you'll only get together for about 2 months or something in the summer at some point. July, August or something.
Well, and that week it was snowing. She's like, let's get together when the weather's better in spring. And I'm like, it's not going to be snowing.
Yeah. It's I'm confident it's a thing here, the Seattle freeze.
That's funny. Yeah. Well, Juan, he doesn't really hang out with people. Like, when are you going to introduce me to all your friends?
Yeah.
We don't get together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. And one thing I was used to a bit more in LA, I guess, it's just hanging out with people, but not only at cafes and bars, but hanging out together at someone's place or something. It was more of a thing, it seemed like. And here, you know, I invite people over and they'll be like, oh, well, it's great, but do you just want to get together at this bar? I'm like, I'll get all the beers and the whiskey that you want and bring it over to my place. So you don't even need to buy it. They're like, no, let's just get together at the bar. It's easier. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. Seattle is an interesting place. Lots of great, and you realize there are a lot of great musicians and artists and a lot of great things about it, but also things that are a bit frustrating, you know, as someone who drove in LA, I think you could bring all of the LA drivers to Seattle and things would move faster, even though it's a bigger city. But no, it's just, there's some things that are just interesting in Seattle, but I do like it. It's a great place. And, It's welcoming. It's nice. But it has its own thing. I don't know. Maybe someday I'll move out. My parents always have that question for me. Are you going to come back to LA?
Yeah. People, I tell them I've just been from Phoenix, you know, I moved from Phoenix and they're like, oh wow, you must be missing the sun. And I'm like, well, you know, actually I'm not, because I had, you know, 7 years of intense sun and, I really kind of like the weather here. I find it kind of cozy and it was so dry in Phoenix. So I think I like to change things up too and not be in the same place, you know, for a really long time. So we'll see how that goes, because
yeah, next time we chat, you'll be in Mozambique or something.
We'll see. Or maybe I'll be in, Kirkland.
Oh yeah, maybe.
I thought it was so funny that that there was an actual town called Kirkland, because Costco.
Yeah. Yeah, most people don't know that. They get here, I'm like, oh, you know, Kirkland, Costco. Oh wow, that really makes sense now. It says Kirkland there. Okay.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So yeah, it's just a journey. It's so great. I still can't believe it that we met like over a decade ago now.
I know. Yeah. And I was also playing with a cello player at the time. We played.
Yeah.
That was an interesting trio. It's flute, cello, keyboard.
Yeah.
Cool.
And voice.
Yeah. And voice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, do you have anything else you want to share before we...
I don't know. It was just a nice conversation. I really have to steal that idea from you. Just click, you know, record and just go for it and not even, you know, not mention. I like that idea a lot. I do like it a lot.
It's actually not mine. My sister-in-law, when she heard I was going to start a podcast, she's like a podcast nerd and she listens to all these podcasts and she's like, so here's one style you could do and here's another style you could do.
Yeah.
And this one guy, he just doesn't even tell his artists that they're recording. And every time in the interview, they're like, oh, are we recording?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the same thing I asked is, are we recording?
I didn't
even know we're recording, but it's great. And it's great that you don't have a set of questions and all that stuff. That's not something I do either. I don't tell people what questions I'll ask. So I just bring the questions at the recording. So they don't know. So that's why I didn't even ask you if you're going to have specific questions for me to prepare for. So it's great. I love this very informal and a conversation, which people want to hear. People want to hear a conversation and feel like they're a part of it. Not just a very specific question of where did you go to school and all this stuff. And I do like your style. It's great. And I got to have you on mine now.
Let's do that sometime. That would be really fun.
And we're in Washington, so maybe we should do it actually in person.
Do it live. Absolutely. I could come to your house or meet you at a bar.
Yeah. I've actually done a couple in the cafes.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, it's a bit frustrating, but I've done a couple of them in the cafe, so
background noise.
Yeah, you do hear the background noise. You do hear the background noise.
Charming.
What is it?
Is it kind of charming to hear that?
Or? It is. It depends. You do have to stay, kind of keep distance from other tables so they're not too close. Right. But that really, the background noise thing, it's nice, but it has to be at a distance. Otherwise, it gets in the way. It does get in the way.
Yeah.
So there it is. It's been great. Thank you.
If people who listen to this want to find out more about the the things that you're involved in, like the youth orchestras and the Mahler Festival.
It's all on my website. And my website is my name, tigranarakelian.com. So I think you're going to have my name on here. So just if you just write tigranarakelian.com,
I'll put it in the link.
Yeah. And it'll have all the info, including a link to my podcast and all that stuff. So it'll all be there. So
great. Cool.
Yeah.
I hope you guys check it out, and it was lovely speaking to you,
Tika. That was fun. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Bye.
Yeah. Take care. See you soon.